Previously on No Reserves Radio.
Oh my God, Angelo, come on. have some self-respect. The Eagles can't hurt you if you don't constantly pander to them.
Here's the biggest indictment of Dame that I can say. Dame has been so like off this year that Ren went on live air and said Jalen Brunson deserved an all-star start over him.
You are now Angelo DiDeLulo.
Do you think it is possible that the management of the Memphis Grizzlies are just buying into the reckless youth movement and they got rid of the one person in the locker room that probably was telling Ja to knock it off?
Because he's taken advantage of me multiple times when I was younger. That sounded bad. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you're correct in that assessment.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to No Reserves Radio. I'm your host, Ren. With me, as always, Angelo. You know the deal with Austin. We do actually have his picks for the playoff game sevens that are... Yeah, if you ever paid attention to your phone, I did ask him for his picks, like, literally 3 minutes ago, and he got back to me immediately. He is at his wife's parents, I believe. Fun little thing I just saw. So this is off the rails for what I have planned for today, but I saw it and I immediately decided to ask, what has been, out of the seasons you have followed, what is your favorite NBA season? Yeah, it's a good question, honestly, because I have two answers.
2015, for sure. 2016.
Sure. Absolutely, that was a great season. That was one of them, and then I had the 2012-2013 season just because of the Pacers that year were actually really fun to watch. Was that Kobe's last year?
Yeah, 2016, yeah. I think was.
So,
yeah.
I added a little salt. So, listeners at home, what has been your favorite NBA season? It's a fun thought experiment. Like, we didn't have to think about it. We both agreed it was 2015, 2016. That was also a really good year for 2K. Just throwing that out there as well. Great soundtrack.
Sure.
That was the one with, that was the Spike Lee one, I think. You're the main character, the player that you created, killed a guy and your friend took the fall, and then you spend his entire life trying to make things up with him, like you're taking care of him because you're a professional ball player, and then like he drives and kills himself. It's a great, like, Spike Lee, you know, probably shouldn't be allowed near a basketball game again, but killer soundtrack. That was the year with Junior on it, with Mama Used to Say. I feel like there was like country on it, pop punk, like it was all over the place. And I think that is something that sports games have done really poorly. Either you have like the NHL games where it's like all hard rock, or 2K or Madden where it's all like rap, and then you get to FIFA and it's all like EDM and international music, which is the most like broad branching of the games, I guess. But sports games used to be better. They used to do everything. Like, I remember when like I would learn new songs from sports games, and now it's just like, oh, what's on the top 10 for hip hop? We're putting that in 2K. And it's just kind of boring. Just a little. And then they have to like blur half the songs because people can't not like, every other word has to be a cuss word or referencing something that's going to get censored in order for the game to be rated E. Look, I'm just saying, like, get better about music choices. Don't just go with the top 40. Not a ton to talk about today, which is weird to say because we do have two game sevens tomorrow. We are recording on Saturday. Normally we record on Thursday. But we wanted this to be as close to possible as at the end of this round of the playoffs, which is this. Like, we will release tomorrow, which is when two series 100% will be closing. So we will be previewing those games, I guess. We'll start with the Celtics, since the Celtics are already done. Cavaliers did get eliminated this week, RIP. I feel like, so let's start with the Cavs, actually, because they're the latest team to be eliminated from playoff contention. So we did get a brief exposure to what a team without Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen would look like. Granted, we didn't get to see a team with the assets that Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen would bring back to the team. Realistically, I didn't think it was that bad. I thought Darius Garland had a decent enough game. I know you're going to say Max Strus had a better game, and he was probably not facing the toughest matchups. I'm guessing Garland was getting matched by Drew Holiday. That's a bit tougher than, I don't know, probably...
What? Jaylen Brown?
I would rather be guarded by Jaylen Brown than Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday is probably the best perimeter defender in the NBA right now. I'm not saying Jaylen Brown's a bad defender. Absolutely not. He's one of the better defenders in the NBA. But if you have a choice of who's guarding you, I would rather be guarded by Jaylen Brown than Drew Holiday, personally. But
I mean, that is fair. I'm just saying, like, they both still had good.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, Darius Garland had the better defender on him. Just saying that. Do you think the experiment of the Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, we just saw the last game of it, or do you think they'll go into next season and then begin? Because I guess.
They kind of gave themselves the out card, because quite honestly, when Mitchell and Garland were out there, I mean, they took a game. They were 1-1. The series was tied. So do you know,
as the Cavs, pursue that 4-year extension with Donovan Mitchell and then just see how the season plays out and then look to move him at the deadline? Do you...
Potentially, if the Cavs, quite honestly, if the Cavs really wanted to get spicy with this, they could move Donovan Mitchell for a bunch of assets, draft LeBron's son, and then sign LeBron.
Like even a month ago, the idea that LeBron was leaving the Lakers was absurd. But
not happening. Yeah, no.
But in that closeout game,
it's very possible.
LeBron sitting courtside in Cleveland, like, I could see him coming back.
Yep.
It's still...
Me too. Am I saying it's set in stone? No, but it's a possibility. That's, quite honestly, Donovan Mitchell's fate might lie more on LeBron
than you can't afford because... LeBron and... Yeah. Unless LeBron takes a massive pay cut, which, to be fair, he could.
He might.
He's old, he...
He might, yeah. He's old. Exactly.
He's going to continue making money well after.
And he said he wants to play with his
previously.
Son.
Now previously. He's kind of changed it to say he just wants to share the floor with his son. So we'll see. But I would rather he finish his career either with the Lakers or with the Cavs. I don't want him to go back to the Heat or to a different team. Like, I want it to be one of those two teams. Because the Heat just has the decision looming over it. Was it some of the best basketball we've ever seen? Yeah, but it does leave a bad taste in your mouth that it really was the super team era. And I don't think anyone really enjoyed the super team era. And now that we're seeing that it's not necessarily the best way to win anymore, and now you go with a dynamic duo with a deep roster around them. I don't know. I think I would rather.
Yeah. So here's a question for you. Which roster do you think would be better? The hypothetical roster that moves Donovan Mitchell and signs LeBron, or the hypothetical roster that just signs Donovan Mitchell?
I think any team is better by adding LeBron James. The question is, you would have to, if you're trading like in this situation, because you're not trading Donovan Mitchell for LeBron James, you're getting another asset back.
Nothing. Yeah.
You've got to go out and get a solid starting two that can shoot. Because Darius Garland's an okay shooter. Evan Mobley's an okay shooter. Jared Allen can't shoot for shit. So you've got to kind of open the floor up. And I'm not really sure who's out there in terms of availability as a starting caliber player. Now, like dream scenario, you're going to hate it, but it would be a player like... Well, no, that wouldn't work because an undersized backcourt. I was going to say Trae Young, because Trae Young is a catch-and-shoot player. Catching dots from LeBron James would be...
Trae Young would be the third best player on the team, though.
I think it would be close to being second. I don't think Darius Garland is that much better than Trae Young. I think it's a lot closer.
Yeah.
I do think he is a slightly more well-rounded player, and I think that makes him better. I think Trae's a better offensive player. But I do think Darius Garland, for how undersized he is, I think his defense is a little underrated.
It is.
Especially like the jumping, the passing lanes, tipping. Like not necessarily getting the ball, but disrupting the play. But I feel like you have to go out and get a shooter. You really have to get multiple shooters, because you've got to have your first few people off the bench being shooters as well. Because if you're having a player of LeBron's ability as a passer on your roster and you aren't surrounding him with shooters.
Here's a question. And I'm not sure if LeBron would even be willing to do this. Nor do I think, like, it depends. So, like, we can establish that Bronny is probably not a starting NBA player, right?
That's a fair assessment, but I think that it's also his draft combine. I don't know if you've been following it, but he's kind of looked nice. He's looked really good. Do I think that necessarily translates to the NBA? I don't know. I'm just saying the combine itself, stellar. Looks fantastic.
But what if they got like a starting small forward and a starting shooting guard, and they had LeBron basically be the sixth man, come off the bench with Bronny, and then give him the minutes, obviously, that LeBron dictates, like have him in with the starters later in the game. But his first time on the court is going to be with his son. It would also help him with his age, too.
Yeah, but do you think LeBron James willingly comes off the bench?
That's the question I'm asking.
I don't.
Would he do it to play with his son? That's really the crux of it. Because if he is, and if he does, and you can still give him like 30 minutes a night, 35 minutes a night, that's an advantage that is going to be hard pressed to see. Now, obviously, you would need to get starting caliber shooting guard and small forward when you traded Donovan. But, I mean, crazier things have happened.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with that. I don't know if LeBron James would give the green light for him to be a role player. Yeah.
Bench player. Yeah. That's fair.
And like, I don't think I would like to see that as an NBA fan. Like that. Like there's players that have regressed and then they come off the bench. Like, for example, Michael Jordan and I think it was his last year with the Wizards or his second to last year. He came off the bench for like 20 something games because he had regressed. He had came back out of retirement. He was obviously not in game shape, and that's a little different. LeBron James, even at 41 obviously. Years old, is still going to be one of the best players in the NBA. At least it's showing that, at least on the offensive side of the ball. So I don't know. From a team building standpoint, I absolutely would love to see it. From a realistic standpoint, I don't see that happening. It just doesn't make a lot of sense with everything we know about LeBron James, the person. I think once he regresses to the point where he would be moved into a bench role, I feel like that's when he's going to hang them up. I don't think he's willingly going to come off the bench. I think he's too understanding of himself. And you don't, when you're one of the greatest of all times, you don't go out like that. You go out at a high. Kobe dropped 60. That's it. He's done. See you later. So I don't know. Like, from a team building standpoint, absolutely. From a realistic standpoint, I don't think that's the move if I'm the Cavs. Like I said, I try to go out and sign or trade for a player that can shoot and defend. Contractually, it doesn't make sense, but Klay Thompson comes to mind. Yeah.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
The only issue is you don't really get the assets back draft capital wise because the Warriors are still going to be good and they're going to be good for a while. I don't know. Other team in that series, because we've spent a long time talking about the loser of that series. Going into the Eastern Conference Finals, Woj tweeted yesterday afternoon, Boston Celtics center Kristaps Porzingis expected to remain sidelined for the start of the Eastern Conference Finals on Tuesday and Thursday. There's optimism for a return in the looming series. So we know for sure, or not for sure, but we're expecting him to at least miss Game 1 and Game 2, which are home games. Obviously, the Boston Celtics are a very talented, deep team. Does this move the needle against either the Pacers or the Knicks, which is who we'll find out tomorrow which team they're playing? Personally, I don't think this necessarily matters so much because you're either playing a young Pacers team or a severely injured Knicks team.
I missed part Kristaps. Of that. Who got hurt and what part of his... Kristaps Porzingis, so what part of his body?
I don't remember what part got hurt. Kristaps...
Because remember, this same Celtics team basically
calf.
Yeah, basically the same calf. Ooh. But anyway, basically this same Celtics team lost to the Miami fucking Heat last year. So you can say that. Yeah, sure. They're deep in theory. They're deep enough to get over the hump. But are they?
I'm saying the hump being when they... a depleted Knicks or a young Pacers team. Because that's who they're playing.
I can't believe I'm saying this. If it's the Pacers, I might pick the Pacers.
Because I'm a Homer Pacer fan.
Think about it. They don't have Kristaps. What are they going to do with Miles Turner and Pascal Siakam without Kristaps?
Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown is big enough to guard Siakam.
Oh my God, stop this. You're going to put Jason Tatum on Miles Garrett. Miles Turner. Ohio. Anyway, but on Miles Turner and put So who's gonna be on? There's just too many questions. I know.
We'll see.
I think they're deep enough to like get over two games without Kristaps. But if they have to go like five games without Kristaps, I think this series is going to the Pacers.
The Pacers still have to win a game seven.
I'm just gonna say it. And yeah, which I don't think is happening. Now, if it's the Knicks, yes, I think they have the firepower to get over the depleted ass Knicks. Yeah, and they have enough
elite defenders to throw at Jalen Brunson. Pacers have...
Exactly.
Shockingly, TJ McConnell has worked really well, and Aaron Nesmith has been okay. Andrew Nembhard, I do not know why Rick Carlisle insists on Nembhard guarding Brunson when Brunson's getting whatever he wants against him, but that's for another series.
Yeah. So previously, well, never mind. We'll get into that later. Go on.
So let's, since we kind of brought up the Pacers Knicks, let's go ahead and just go straight into that game seven. Tomorrow it is the, so it's interesting. I was reading this earlier. So the Knicks are playing a game seven at Madison Square Garden for the first time since May 21st, 28 years ago. 20 of the 27 players
yep.
that have played in this series so far were not even born yet. That
awesome,
is
awesome, awesome, awesome,
awesome. So when you,
I thought you were about to hit me with something somber, like everyone who played for the Knicks in that series what? Is dead or something.
It's not that.
Yeah, I thought you were coming with something somber.
but that was kind of shocking to me, just because it's New York. Like, we call New York the Mecca of basketball, right? And like, New York has had some really mm-hmm. good teams. At least memorable teams. They had Carmelo for a while.
Here's the question: Who's the old head that was alive when that happened?
What? There's no.
You said that there was one player in this
20 of the 27.
Oh,
so
okay.
So like TJ McConnell.
I thought you said like 27, 28.
It's just shocking to me because I feel like the Knicks have been good enough to actually make noise, but I guess not. I don't know what curse they were under to get to this point. It's a long way of saying that this is kind of a blast from the past. Pacers Knicks over the years have gone toe to toe. I think their last game seven in the Garden was against the Pacers. And the last two series, which were 1995 and prior, game sevens, Pacers and Knicks have alternated. So one of them won, then one of them won. I think the Knicks won the last one. So historically, the Pacers are due to win this one, but that is a long fucking time. So going into tomorrow, or tonight, if you're listening to this Sunday morning, which is when you will be listening to it. So tonight, the Knicks and Pacers tip off at, I want to say, 7:30. Going into mm-hmm. this game, hold on, I closed the game thread, which had like the injury reports and all that shit. Oh god, that is formatted terribly. Hold on.
I know the Knicks are without OG Anunoby. I believe they're
yeah,
without
they're, so Josh Hart is gonna be a game time decision. He had an abdominal injury early in the game, tried to play through it, ended up going to the locker room after I think 30 minutes. It was clearly impacting his ability to move the way that we know Josh Hart likes to move. So they're missing Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson, Josh Hart, potentially, OG Anunoby, which is, in my opinion, the biggest hit of any of them. Jalen Brunson's hobbled. I think Dante DiVincenzo is the only starter from the season that is not dealing with some kind of injury at this point in time. On the flip side, Pacers, the only player I believe that's listed on the injury report is Benedict Mathurin, who is out with a labrum tear. He's done for the year, no matter what. That said, it is the Garden. New York is probably the best place to be the home team in. I'm not typically one to talk about refs, but all I'm saying is go look at the free throw differentials every game. That's all I'm saying. So I do think that realistically the Knicks win this series. I think Jalen Brunson has been the best player in the series. I'm not picking the Knicks, though, because as I've said, I will not pick the Pacers. I will pick the Pacers to go all the way if they end up making the finals somehow. Health aside, this is why the Pacers brought Pascal Siakam in, to have someone who had played in those big games, hit big shots, has been to the promised land. Because this Pacers team, this is really a lot of these players, this is their first real time in the playoffs. Even Miles Turner, this is really his first playoff showing, and he's been with the team since 2015. And obviously, there's players like TJ McConnell and Doug McDermott. There is playoff experience on the team, but Pascal Siakam is the one that really needs to step up in this game. And that's not to say like Miles Turner, Tyrese Halliburton like shouldn't, because Tyrese Halliburton has not really had a great playoffs. We know he's still been battling that hamstring injury from near the end of the season, but he's no longer listed on the injury report, so he should be back to full health, and he needs to be a lot more aggressive if the Pacers are going to win Game 7 on the road. Austin picks the Knicks to win this series. What does Angelo say about Game 7, Indiana, New York?
So, here's the thing. This is where I said that playoff inexperience was going to get the Pacers. And they do. They have a lot of playoff inexperience. Tyrese Halliburton, at least based on what I've seen, has had some very great games and some very pedestrian games. Is that fair? It seems like it's one or the other.
Yeah, there's no like almost. He had an okay game.
Yeah, there's no he had like a 20-point 10 assist game. It's just not happening. So, on the other hand, the Knicks are just rolling Jalen Brunson out there and hoping they
win. Yeah, because he's not healthy either.
Yes, the Knicks have lots of playoff experience. Well, I wouldn't say lots, but they have playoff experience when healthy. They aren't healthy. And both teams are marred by a lot of terrible luck in their history. So I can't even go off that. Quite honestly, I think if the Pacers lose this game, it would be a travesty for them. Absolutely. Like, just dead ass. They have no right to lose this game just based on what they have going out there versus what they're going up against. And that's why
the only defense I will make to that, because I completely agree, there's no reason the Pacers should lose this game on paper. They have a 98% healthy roster versus the Knicks, probably like 30% healthy roster. The only argument that I can make, and it's not a very good one, and I acknowledge that, is that the Pacers shouldn't even have been here. I'm 100% acknowledging it's not a good argument. But from a fan standpoint, I wanted to make the playoffs because it had been a while. I wanted to win the first round because it had been a decade. Getting to the Eastern Conference Finals, it feels too early for this team. We got a lot of luck in that series against the Milwaukee Bucks with Giannis being injured, Dame being hurt, Chris Middleton only being Superman for long enough for us to put the series away. And then to go into New York. And if you had read it during that time, like everyone was, oh, this is going to be a New York sweep, blah, blah, blah. Honestly, that didn't seem that absurd to me. Because again, this Pacers team is young. This is their first real playoff experience. And they're playing a team that on paper was a better team than the Milwaukee Bucks, given the Milwaukee Bucks injuries. Because even with Julius Randle being down, they're a pretty intimidating team with Jalen Brunson. Honestly, Isaiah Hartenstein and Dante DiVincenzo have been nice. And OG Anunoby, they've lost like three games when he's played. So there's also a bit of luck in the injuries against the Knicks series. Again, you can only play the team in front of you. If we go through any champion in the history of ever, they had luck when it came to injuries. That's part of sports.
That's kind of funny coming from you, because I've had to make that argument a lot of times, and you're like, yeah,
oh, no, there's
but...
always an asterisk. There is going to be an asterisk. But so if the Pacers lose tomorrow, I'm disappointed, but I don't not expect it. If that makes sense. Like, I feel like
I'm going with the Pacers on this one. Like I said, it will be a travesty if they lose this game to me.
It'll be disappointing for sure. I just don't think that it depends on how they lose, right?
If they get blown out, are you going to come out here?
There's no excuse for a blowout.
And...
if it's a close game and it comes down to a Jalen Brunson buzzer beater and the Knicks shot 43 free throws and the Pacers shot 8, that's not a travesty.
Yeah. No, you can. No,
so
that's not,
it,
you're
it
right,
depends
you're
on
right.
how they lose. If they get but blown out they... tomorrow, if by like if New York hits the dagger in the first quarter, yeah, that's a travesty. Because even a young team, there's no excuse for that when you're playing a team that's as injury depleted as the Knicks are. But if they lose on one shot and it's a close game, and you know, them's the shakes. Jalen Brunson hits a big shot, absolutely. That's not a travesty. So we'll reconvene after the series on whether or not it's a travesty either way, because I think it's the same the other way. I feel like Jalen Brunson is so good that the Pacers shouldn't be able to blow out the Knicks. Even injured, like, he is clearly the best player in the series. And so I feel like he should be able to keep it pretty close. So we have two people taking the Pacers. I'm not going to... Actually, we have one person taking the Pacers, one person taking the Knicks, and one person abstaining, because I have a pony in this race. So I'm going to pick the Pacers, but I'm not counting it towards the no reserves picks, because I am incredibly biased.
Of course.
Let's go ahead and talk. Mavericks Thunder, they play tonight. I was trying to decide whether I wanted to do Nuggets or Mavericks first. I feel like Nuggets, we're going to have more to talk about.
Yeah, probably.
So Dallas Mavericks versus OKC Thunder. That is tonight at 8 p.m. If you're listening to this on Sunday, which why are you not? It'll have been last night. Series is 2-3, Mavericks leading. This is the closeout game for the Mavericks. I need to pull up the stats real quick for the series so far. Okay, there we go. So this is the closeout game for the Mavericks. Kyrie Irving has never lost a closeout game. So I am going to stick with that, and I'm going to pick the Mavericks to finish the series off tonight. The only thing giving me pause is I don't know who's reffing tonight. If it is Scott Foster, the Thunder are winning. Is there any way to quickly check? I mean, quickly, though. I'll pull it up later. I don't know. I think the Thunder on paper are a better overall team, but you got Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving on the other side. And like I said,
okay, got it. It's Josh Tiven, umpire Mitchell Irving, alternate Brett Barkney, Arnike.
So the Mavs are probably winning tonight. Again, I think Shea has been the best. Shea has been one of the best players in the playoffs as a whole. I just, like I said, history is on my side. I'm taking Kyrie Irving just because he has, again, never lost a closeout game. He's never, one time in his career, lost a put-away game.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And this is kind of the series that I'm willing to excuse for the Thunder, because, like I said, the Thunder are young.
They're very young. They're just the key piece is a rookie.
Yeah.
A 2-year rookie, but he's a rookie.
Yeah. So, yeah, I get it. I thought the Thunder would win this series simply because they have more firepower to throw at the Mavericks, but SGA can kind of neutralize Luka as far as like matching point for point, but Kyrie is really the X factor here. So, and Kyrie's playing great. Other than like one
there
or two games.
There was a hilarious moment. So if I see a player absurdly flop, I want their team to lose. And in game five, Kyrie set a screen on Lu Dort. There's no contact whatsoever, and Lu Dort jumps to the ground like he got hit by a freight train. They didn't call it, but like, I cannot stand flopping in the NBA. There was a video I saw on Facebook Reels the other day where it was going through the years, and it showed like kids like playing basketball when MJ was playing, and like they're driving, like there's a lot of like physicality, and then Kobe, and they're like bumping into each other and then shooting a fader. And then it shows the LeBron era, and it's this little tiny kid, like 3 feet tall, and he's being guarded by this kid that's like four, he's a lot bigger, he's significantly bigger. And it's often inbound, and the smaller kid kind of like lightly touches the bigger kid, and the kid's head snaps back like he got shot. Like he goes falling to the floor. Like it's the LeBron era. And I don't necessarily blame LeBron. I think it's a problem with the current culture in the NBA because players like to sell fouls. And the NBA kind of rewards it because at the start of the year, we did have the new flopping rules where it was going to be an automatic technical. And then, like, that's been called twice, I think. And one of it was on Dante DiVincenzo. My thought, though, I was thinking about this the other day, and it kind of fits into Adam Silver. Okay. So, do you remember a couple years ago when Adam Silver was talking about resting players and how it was inexcusable and we had to get it under control, right? Mm-hmm. And he kept saying it, and he kept saying, okay, well, we're going to do something. And people kept doing it. And now this year comes around and suddenly there's these more draconian rules in place in terms of NBA awards and fines for teams for resting players, right? Do you think it's possible that the NBA and Adam Silver, or through Adam Silver's leadership, came out and said, okay, we're going to start calling flops as technical fouls automatically and dole out suspensions, fines, whatever, if you keep doing it. And they implement that rule. And then players keep doing it. And the NBA barely calls it. And then next season, the NBA is going to crack down on it. That kind of fits Adam Silver's MO. Because at this point, why? Because there's been no, as far as I know, fines after games, because that was what it was supposed to be. And like we have, like in the Pacers Knicks game three, where Jalen Brunson, instead of just shooting a wide open layup, grabs his face so that he can shoot two free throws. And they reviewed it and said that it was a foul, and there's literally no contact at all. The way the rule's written is that player is supposed to be fined or whatever the punishment's supposed to be, and it hasn't happened yet.
So you think that after not being strict on a rule that he's just going to come out next year and be strict on a rule?
No, I think that it's kind of like a warning shot. So, like, here's the rule and seeing how players were going to respond to it. Like, basically giving the players a chance to police themselves.
Yep.
Like, kind of gentle parenting, right? So you tell them, okay, we're going to start punishing you if you keep doing it. And letting them kind of figure it out. And then next year, because there are players since the rule was implemented that did lessen their flopping a little bit. Some didn't. I don't know. I just think it kind of fits his like style to implement a rule and then start super enforcing.
No offense, but that's some pussy shit, because like a rule without like a punishment behind it or a way to enforcement is,
well, there is
just
a way to
suggestion.
Enforce it.
But he's not. So it's one and the same. That's kind of the thing. The rule won't be taken serious until he starts.
But that's what I'm saying. Like,
the punishment.
It does kind of fit his style to say, we're implementing this rule. You get a season to figure it out. And then next year, we're going to start enforcing it. Just because he doesn't want to implement a rule and then hard and fast follow it, because half of your star players are going to be suspended game one.
Mm-hmm.
So giving them time to figure it out. And maybe there are like calls behind the scenes like, hey, this is going to be a suspension next year, this play that you did right here. Because I think the hard thing is, I think there's a fine line between selling a call and flopping. And I think people overlap the two and they're not mutually exclusive. Because selling a call is like you got punched in the face and you're over dramatic about it because you want to make sure the ref saw that you got punched in the face. Flopping is a guy's hand brushed slightly past you and you shot your head back like you're a professional wrestler and hit the floor and are crying on the floor. There's a difference. And I think it's hard to figure out where that line is from the NBA standpoint, because we don't want this. Because I don't know if you follow like men's professional soccer during like the World Cup. It is embarrassing to watch, because you have these moments of absolutely insane feats of physical dominance, right? Like, even if you don't follow soccer, watching the World Cup, you're going to be excited at least once a game. At least. And that's without knowing anything about the game. But it's broken because flopping in soccer is so much worse than flopping in any other sport I've ever seen. And that's kind of the path the NBA is taking. But I don't know. That was a way of just continuing the conversation with the Mavericks, because there really isn't anything to say about this series.
So what do you think the Thunder's path to victory is, since time. We're basically both in the
You mean like matters. This year?
Yes. I'm just saying winning the series. Like winning the just like
so yes. I feel like they've already made necessary changes. I think you need to take probably Josh Giddey out of the starting lineup. You need to put a legitimate big in. Jalen Williams would be a good start. Move Chet Holmgren to the four. Just because it feels like the Mavericks are just getting to the rim too easily. And there's not as much of a... Because you're going to be able to keep up with the Mavericks offensively. But you've got to limit them. And you've got to play better defense than them. And I don't think you get that when you have Josh Giddey in the starting lineup and Chet Holmgren at your five.
I don't think Chet's a bad defender.
Yeah.
I mean,
like you're talking, you're talking like it would be impossible when they're starting Kyrie.
I'm confused.
You made it sound like it was impossible for the Thunder to be able to play better defense than the Mavericks when they're starting SGA and Chet. Is that the statement you made?
So I'm saying improve your defense.
Okay.
Gotcha. I'm saying that you're not going to be able to make changes on the offensive side of the ball that are going to make you able to outscore the Mavericks. You need to make changes on the defensive side of the ball to get rid of those easy points.
Okay, that's fair.
What about you? What do you think they need to change?
I don't think they got a shot.
That's fair. They really... It's just kind of they drew a short stick for this round. All right. Time for the big one. Game 7, Nuggets Timberwolves. Happy. So I'll go ahead and just put Austin's prediction here. He is predicting the Wolves. Let me double check. It's the Wolves. Yeah, Wolves. So he's taking the Timberwolves here. Again, I'm taking the Nuggets. I don't even have pause. I doubted the Nuggets at the start of the series because they went down 2-0 at home. They looked really bad. And then granted, last game they look pretty rough, but they are a team that bounces back really well. Nuggets in 7.
Okay. So, I think the series for the Nuggets comes down to Jamal Murray. And
I disagree.
You're insane. And the reports I'm getting from Jamal are very conflicting. So I'm going to predict Jamal has another rough game. And with that said, I'm going to predict the T-Wolves win this series. Now, Jamal could prove me wrong. He could come out and drop like 20 or 30 or 40 and the Nuggets win this game, but I think this series hinges on the status of Jamal.
The thing is, the Nuggets are in a game 7. In a series, they started down 2-0.
Yep. Absolutely.
In the playoffs as a whole, okay, keep in mind, we are at the end of the second round so far. Jamal Murray is averaging less points than field goals attempted through 11 games. Mm-hmm. In game 7, or in game 6, he had 10 points, 2 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 turnovers. He was negative 32, 4 for 18 from the field, 2 for 7 from 3, 0 for 0 from the line.
Yep.
They won that game without Jamal Murray.
The last game?
No, they lost it.
No, they didn't. They got blown out, dude. I was about to say, wait, what are you talking about? They haven't won a game in this series. Jamal Murray hasn't dropped 20, dude. That's why I'm saying it's Jamal Murray. That is the deciding factor. Nikola needs all his comrades. So either his comrades are coming along and they're winning this game, or they're not, and he's losing this game. That's reality.
And I'm predicting the comrades don't come along because I'm not sure what the status of Jamal is. I'm gonna be cautious.
The only game that Jamal Murray has looked good was like game 4 or game 5 versus the Lakers. Besides that, like, even his points, he's slow. He's inefficient.
Yeah, he's hurt.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, they're to this point with not great Jamal Murray.
Right, but they're still getting enough out of Jamal Murray. That's the thing. When it's diminished, they don't have a chance, dude.
So let's
when he's out, they don't have a chance.
Let's backtrack, okay? So in the game with the stat line that I was just talking about, right?
Yeah, right, well, right. Blown out, yes.
So you're saying that's because Jamal Murray didn't score 20 points, right? Is it possible that part of the reason they got blown out is he shot 18 field goals and made 4? And not that he didn't score,
absolutely,
but 18 possessions ended with him taking a shot.
Absolutely, yeah.
So with how I'm going to phrase it here, how dog shit Jamal Murray has been, the Nuggets are winning in spite of him, not because of him. Because I don't think he's had an efficient, like a truly efficient game. I think it's a lot of high volume.
Yes, so 100%.
I would rather, instead of him taking 18 field goals, I'd rather he take 0 and Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., or Nikola Jokic get another couple shots each.
Okay, well then the T-Wolves, thank you for their advance to the Western Conference Finals. So I'm sure Ant will thank you. He'll write a nice thank you letter to
me. They better. That was actually all of my notes. That was my last one. That was quick.
Awesome.
That was quick.
The Nuggets have scored 100 points in 2 of these games. In the entire series. The
Wolves defense is kind of...
Oh, no, 3. Sorry. Elite. 3.
I don't think that's a knock on the Nuggets at all. I think that the Wolves deserve their props for their defense.
Really?
Let me see. Okay. What did I just click on? What did I just click on? No, I don't want an NVIDIA commercial. I don't want a U.S. Air Force commercial. It's still playing. Why is it still playing? Just double checking to make sure I don't have anything else. Oh, my times were wrong. Pacers Knicks tips off at 3:30. Wolves Nuggets at 8. Mike Budenholzer was asked about having a point guard. He said they probably need one, but they need to be able to play without one. It's an interesting take. I did not see this. This would have been relevant information earlier. Clutch Sports will indeed meet with the Cavaliers this offseason to facilitate Darius Garland being moved. If Donovan Mitchell decides to stay, Windhurst confirmed Mitchell Garland backcourt is on their way to being split up. So apparently, if Mitchell stays, Darius Garland is being traded. Any thoughts? You are muted if you are talking. Just an FYI. Well, while he's figuring out his life, if you like what we do here, leave a like, comment, subscribe, follow, whatever the platform you're listening on lets you do. Do that for us. Leave us a 5-star, 4-star, 3-star, whatever review you think we're deserving of, leave it. Follow us on socials at No Reserves on all platforms. And on your platforms, make sure that you do hit the notification so that you do find out when we release those little special episodes. I think he's back.
Special Look, episodes?
Coming. Do you?
What special? We don't do that special episodes. What's a special coming? Episode?
So, did you hear what I said about Garland? Oh, Jesus.
I didn't hear anything.
So, Clutch Sports will meet with the Cleveland Cavaliers this offseason to discuss Darius Garland being traded if Donovan Mitchell decides to stay. So, one way or the other. Yeah. So, it's.
What?
Garland Mitchell is done one way or the other. If Donovan stays, wow. Garland's traded. If Mitchell leaves, then so.
I don't know how I feel about that. Interesting.
Because here's the thing. Your argument against the small 1 and 2 is the defense, but Garland's defense isn't
no,
actually
that atrocious.
No, for
someone as small as he is, it's very adequate.
So I'm curious what they're trying to accomplish then with that. Are they trying to get more wings, or are they just going to put Donovan out there with a bunch of wing
it's
players?
It's probably in line with what we were saying. Like, you build a team with the idea of attracting a free agent star wing, like LeBron James.
So then is there a scenario where they get Donovan and yes. LeBron then? Is the question.
Yes, because... Oh, well.
That could be very interesting. Because that takes less of an onus on Donovan to play make. He can focus on scoring. LeBron gets that dude who can take over, score. And, of course, LeBron has the center with Jared Allen or Evan Mobley. That actually would be very scary in the East. I would probably predict them.
Season Darius Garland takes up 25.43% of the Cavs cap. He's making $40 million next year. That's probably enough to get a LeBron James. It's a pay cut, but it's not a massive pay cut.
Right.
Like a retirement contract.
That would be very interesting to see. Donovan Mitchell, LeBron, Mobley, maybe Allen, maybe the
I would be really interested to see where
where Garland would go.
I'm thinking of teams that need a point guard that are close. You could do the Garland Trae Young talk, but
it kind of defeats the purpose.
That'd be the same situation.
It would probably be one of those young teams, like a not a Washington Wizards, but like a Brooklyn Nets, Philadelphia 76ers would be a good one.
Because it kind of serves both teams' purposes. What if he got traded to the Celtics for Drew Holiday? So Garland would be passing to Brown and Tatum. They would have more playmaking, giving less of an onus on both Brown and Tatum to handle the ball. And then Cleveland gets a defender back who can help alleviate with the backcourt defense.
Hold on, let me.
I'm not sure if you could still get the money work with LeBron, but
money doesn't
that'd
work.
That'd be an interesting scenario. Yeah.
I mean, I can't say that for certain, but Garland's making 10,000 or 10 million more per year. So that would be tough to make the salaries match, I think, because I'm guessing Boston is well over the luxury tax.
Yeah, that's probably true. Trying to think of what other teams. It would have to be a team that has like a lot of pieces but needs a point guard.
Minnesota Timberwolves would be the contender for me.
Yeah.
But I do think a young team that's potentially blowing it up would be, or a team that's just potentially blowing it up that has valuable trade assets. Chicago Bulls comes to mind.
Bulls would be interesting.
Or a contender that's near the end of their life cycle. Crazy thought, Miami Heat. San Antonio Spurs.
Spurs with Wemby would like, be very interesting.
The issue is you've got to make everything work out. But I do think that there's a lot of potential right now. Clippers don't have the assets. They could use Garland.
No way. Clippers. They got. Well, it depends what happens with Harden and Russ. But yeah.
Kings don't need another point guard. Nuggets don't need a point guard.
No.
Detroit sure as shit doesn't need another point guard. Pelicans? Yeah. Pelicans could work.
Pelicans, depending on Zion's health.
Pelicans, I think Pelicans, Spurs, well. Or Nets would be my picks. Like, from a realistic point of view. Because other young teams... Wizards have to go full in on the Jordan Poole experience. Like, they dug their hole. They get to live with it. Charlotte Hornets. It doesn't make sense. LaMelo is too ball dominant and should be ball dominant for a player like Darius Garland. Mavericks already have a point guard. Pacers have a point guard. Bulls would be an interesting fit depending on what they do with the rest of their pieces. Suns would be a really good fit, but I don't know what assets they have to send back is the problem. And their picks aren't going to be super valuable. I don't know. We'll get, I'm sure more rumors will pop up like in the coming weeks now that Rich Paul has told them that if Donovan Mitchell is re-signed, they're trading Garland. We will find out.
If not, then they're trading Mitchell, probably. Yeah, so
it would have to be, because I think he's a free agent, but it would be a sign and trade. Or he has, or does he have?
He's a free agent this offseason.
I feel like he has one more year left. I almost dropped my mic.
I think it's
twice. Donovan Mitchell contract. He is eligible for a 4-year extension. Oh no, he's got a player option. So he could be a free agent. That could be very interesting. He is making less money than Darius Garland. So he's probably opting out of that, even if he does sign an extension. Because this will probably be his last major contract, because he's 29 going into next year.
Yep.
I don't know. It'll be a fun offseason for sure. I thought it was going to be pretty quiet, but already getting exciting. Do you have anything else? So, what is coming up on No Reserves Football this week?
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. Me and Alex got together. We said, well, Alex asked me, what do you want to talk about? I was like, you could rant about Justin Fields. And he was like, okay, what else do we got? And I was like, that was it. And so we decided not to do an episode week.
It deep into the off season for the NFL. So maybe we'll decide to do one of those special episodes at some point this week just to fill a gap. I feel like there's a lot we could do. We can do a lot of pop culture shit and like, it'd be fun. It'd be fun. We'll talk about it more. Will we actually do it? Probably not. It's a busy week. We are nothing is set in, well, part of it's set in stone. So we're doing our little no reserves get together.
I didn't know you were going to say something about it.
That's a thing. That's a thing. We're going to go do stuff, and then we're going to attempt to record an episode in a room. It's going to be great. You might hear things get thrown across the room at each other. It'll be fun. Maybe. We'll find out.
Maybe. Ren is not allowed to have any weapons on hand.
Look, I can turn anything into a weapon if you give me enough time. Boop doop doop doop. Yeah, I got nothing else. Do turn on your little notifications for when we release episodes, because since there's not going to be a football episode this week, maybe we'll do something, maybe we won't. I don't know. We'll find out. Besides that, we will see you guys next Sunday for sure. Potentially sooner. We might do, even if we don't do like a special episode, we might try to just do a, because this episode is releasing at the end of the second round, and we're gonna have like half of the games for the conference finals before our next episode, and I'm not really sure I want to do that, so we'll play it by ear. If you don't got anything else, I'm ready to head out. All right. Well, have a great week, guys. Love you. Bye.
Run, you're bad.